Okay, we're continuing our study of Cantor's notion of cardinality, and we're going to talk today about Cantor's most dramatic result. Now, let me say a few words just to putting it in context. So, apart from rational numbers and irrational numbers, which of course make up the reals, there are other classifications of numbers. There are algebraic numbers and transcendental numbers. Algebraic numbers are numbers that are solutions of a polynomial with integer coefficients, and transcendental numbers are numbers that are not algebraic. And, for example, it turns out that pi is transcendental and e is transcendental, but it is very, very difficult to actually prove those two statements. What Cantor was able to do using his ideas about cardinality is to show that most real numbers are transcendental without actually naming any particular one. So this is abstract mathematics at work here, and it's really very interesting, and I will start to explain it right now. So, proposition, the collection script P of all polynomials Px with integer coefficients is countable. Proof, let script P sub k be the set of polynomials of degree k with integer coefficients. A polynomial P of degree k having integer coefficients has the form p of x equals p naught plus p1x plus p2x squared plus dot 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 plus pkx to the k, where the pj are integer constants. So we can identify p of x, this polynomial, with a k plus 1 tuple, p naught p1 through pk. So each polynomial is identified with a k plus 1 tuple of integers. And by an earlier corollary, then, we know that p sub k then is countable because it's just the product, k plus 1 full product, of the integers. And the integers are, of course, countable. And then script p, of course, is just the union of all the p sub j's from j equals 0 to infinity, and the countable union of countable sets is countable. And that's the end of the story. So the collection of all polynomials with integer coefficients is countable. So now here's a formal definition of what I told you a few minutes ago. Let x be a real number. We say x is algebraic if there is a polynomial p with integer coefficients so that p of x is 0. Example, the number square root of 2 is algebraic because it satisfies the polynomial equation x squared minus 2 equals 0, and that polynomial, of course, has integer coefficients. Less obvious is the statement that square root of 3 plus square root of 2 is algebraic. You can check for yourself that it satisfies the polynomial x to the fourth minus x squared plus 1. If you plug root 3 plus root 2 into that polynomial, you get 0. Pi and e are not algebraic, but this assertion is extremely difficult to prove. We say that pi and e are transcendental. In the next proposition, we give an elegant method for showing that most real numbers are transcendental without actually saying what any of them are. In what follows, a sequence on a set S is a function from the natural numbers to S. We usually write such a sequence as S of 1, S of 2, S of 3, or S sub 1, S sub 2, S sub 3. Example, there exists an infinite set which is not countable. We call such a set uncountable. Our example will be the set S of all sequences on the set 0, 1. In other words, S is the set of all infinite sequences of zeros and ones. To see that S is uncountable, assume the contrary. That is, we assume S is countable. Then there is a first sequence, script S super 1, which is a set of all S super 1 sub j, j equal 1 to infinity. A second sequence, script S super 2, which is a set of all little s super 2 sub j for j equal 1 to infinity, and so forth. This is supposed to be a complete enumeration of all the members of S, all the sequences of zeros and ones. But now consider the sequence script T, which is t sub j, j equals 1 to infinity, which we define as follows. If s11 is 0, then set t1 equal 1. If s11 is 1, then set t1 equals 0. If s22 equals 0, then set t2 equal 1. If s22 equal 1, then set t2 equals 0. If s33 equals 0, then set t3 equal 1. If s33 equal 1, then set t3 equals 0. If sjj equals 0, then set tj equal 1. If sjj equal 1, then set tj equals 0. Now, the sequence script T, which is Tj, differs from the first sequence, S1, in the first element. T1 is different from S11. That's the way we defined it. T differs from the second sequence, S2, in the second element. T2 is not equal to S22. And so on. The sequence T differs from the J sequence, Sj in the jth element. Tj is not equal to Sjj. So the sequence T is not in the set S. But T is supposed to be in the set S because S is a complete enumeration of all sequences of zeros and ones. That's a contradiction. So S cannot be countable, it must be uncountable. Example, consider the set of all decimal representations of numbers strictly between 0 and 1, both terminating and non-terminating. Here a terminating decimal is one of the form 0.43926, while a non-terminating decimal is one of the form 0.14159265, dot, dot, dot. In the case of the non-terminating decimal, no repetition is implied. The decimal simply continues without cease and without any pattern. Now, the set of all those decimals containing only the digits 0 and 1 can be identified in a natural way with a set of sequences containing only 0 and 1. Just put commas between the digits. And we just saw the set of such sequences is uncountable. Since the set of all decimal numbers is an even bigger set, it must be uncountable also. Put in different words, if the set of all decimal numbers were countable, then any of its infinite subsets would be countable. That is one of our earlier results. Thus, the collection of decimal numbers containing only digits 0 and 1 would be countable. And that's not true. As you may know, the set of all decimals identifies with the set of all real numbers. Many real numbers have two decimal representations, one terminating and one not. Think for a moment about which numbers these are and why this observation does not invalidate the present discussion. We find, then, that the set R of all real numbers is uncountable. Contrast this with the situation for the rationals, which are countable. In a later lecture, we will learn more about how the real number system is constructed using just elementary set theory. Now we have the promised very dramatic result of Gayer-Cantor about the transcendental numbers. Proposition, the set of all algebraic numbers is countable. The set of all transcendental numbers is uncountable. Proof, let script P be the collection of all polynomials with integer coefficients. We've already proved that P is a countable set. If little p is in script P, then let S sub P denote the set of real roots of P. Of course, S sub P is finite, and the number of elements in S sub P does not exceed the degree of P. Then the set A of algebraic real numbers may be written as A equals the union over P in script P of S sub P. In other words, it's the union of all the roots of all the polynomials with integer coefficients. This is the countable union of finite sets, so of course it is countable. Now that we know the set A of algebraic numbers is countable, we can see that the set T of transcendental numbers must be uncountable for R equals A union T. A and T are disjoint. A is the algebraic numbers, T is the transcendental numbers. If T were countable, then since A is countable, it would follow that R is countable, but that's not true. So the contradiction shows that the transcendental numbers must be uncountable. Okay, so that's Cantor's great theorem. Let's move on. Proposition, let S be in any infinite set, that S has a subset T that is countable. Proof, let T1 be any element in the set S. Now let T2 be any element that is distinct from T1. Continue this procedure. It will not terminate because that would imply that S is finite. And it will produce a countable set T that is a subset of S. End of proof. To repeat the main point of this section, the natural numbers have a cardinality that we call countable. The real numbers have a cardinality that we call uncountable. These cardinalities are distinct. In fact, the real numbers form a larger set because there is an injective mapping of the natural numbers into the reals, but not the other way around. We refer to the cardinality of the natural numbers as countable and to the cardinality of the real numbers as the cardinality of the continuum or uncountable. It is natural to ask whether there is a set with cardinality strictly between countable and the continuum. Gayer-Cantor posed this question 100 years ago, and his failed attempts to resolve the question tormented his final years. We shall discuss the resolution of this continuum hypothesis in a later lecture. Is it an important result of set theory due to Cantor that given any set S, the set of all subsets of S called the power set of S has strictly greater cardinality than the set S itself? As a simple example, let script S be ABC. Then the set of all subsets of S is empty set, a singleton A, singleton B, singleton C, the set AB, the set AC, the set BC, and the set ABC. The set of all subsets has 8 elements, while the original set has 3. We stress that this result is true not just for finite sets, but also for infinite sets. If S is an infinite set, then the set of all its subsets, the power set, has greater cardinality than S itself. Thus, there are infinite sets of arbitrarily large cardinality. In other words, there is no greatest cardinal. This fact is so important that we now formulate it as a theorem. Theorem, Cantor, let S be any set, then the power set PS, P of S, consisting of all subsets of S, has cardinality greater than the cardinality of S. In other words, card S less than card P of S. Proof. First, observe that the function f from S to P, S goes to set containing S, is 1 to 1. Thus, we see that the cardinality of S is less than or equal to the cardinality of the power set. We need to show that there is no function from S onto P of S. Let G be a function from S to P of S. We will produce an element of PS that cannot be in the image of this mapping. Define T to be the set of all S and S so that S is not an element of GS. Assume, seeking a contradiction, that T equals G of Z for some Z and S. By definition of T, the element Z and T, if and only if Z is not an element of G of Z. Thus, Z and T is an element of T, if and only if Z is not an element of T. That's a contradiction. We see, then, that G cannot map S onto PS. Therefore, cardinality of S is strictly less than cardinality of power set of S. In some of the examples in this section, we constructed a bijection between a given set such as Z, the integers, and a proper subset of that set such as E, the even integers. It follows from the definitions that this is possible only when the sets involved are infinite, for finite sets this would contradict the pigeonhole principle. In fact, any infinite set can be placed in a set-theoretic isomorphism with a proper subset of itself. We explore this assertion in the exercises. Put in other words, we have come upon an intrinsic characterization of infinite sets. We state it without proof as a proposition. Proposition, let S be a set. The set S is infinite if and only if it can be put in one-to-one correspondence with a proper subset of itself. One of the exercises outlines a proof of this proposition. That's the end for today. Thank you for listening.